Welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. My name is Michael Eriksson, and this is episode 2 of our beginner series. In the last episode of the series, we covered an introduction to triathlon and to the series itself. And if you missed that episode, I'd recommend going back and listening to it first, because it covers the basics of what triathlon is, the different distances, and essential terminology. So it's a great place to start if you're completely new to triathlon. Today, we're talking about how to choose your first triathlon event. There are a lot of factors to consider here, and picking the right race for you can make a big difference in your first triathlon experience. So I'll walk you through the most important factors to consider here, including distance, race type, timing, and practical tips on how to find events. And also I'll share some real-world stories from other athletes. But just quickly before we continue on with the episode, a big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. They create carbohydrate products like gels, drink mix, and chews, as well as electrolyte products. And I'll just explain the basics of these products at a high level here. So carbohydrates are your main fuel source in a race because the intensity is relatively high and you have carbohydrates in a limited supply in your body. So depending on how long you'll be out on the race course for, you may need to supplement with additional carbohydrates that can be taken up and used quickly and effectively by the muscles when you're out there on the race course. And gels and drink mixes are great for this purpose. Electrolytes, on the other hand, are used to replace the salt that you lose when you sweat, because if you lose too much salt, then your muscle function may be temporarily impaired, or you may suffer from cramps. So those are pretty common occurrences. A much rarer, but also much more severe situation that can happen is if you overhydrate with pure water and you lose a lot of salt in your sweat, then you could suffer from something called hyponatremia. This is common, especially on hot days when you need to hydrate a lot, but you at the same time lose a lot of sweat and a lot of salt with that sweat. So avoiding hyponatremia is a main reason to use some electrolytes in your fluids. And as a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order of Precision Fuel and Hydration of 2025 by using the code TTS25 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Now, let's start with a bit of an introduction here and discuss why your first race choice matters. This is because basically your first triathlon experience can set the tone for your relationship with the sport. So ideally, we want it to be something that builds your confidence, gets you excited to do more, and helps you feel like you belong in this sport and want to do more of it. And the right first race sets you up for this level of success. It gives you momentum. Whereas the wrong one might make you feel overwhelmed, underprepared, and even question whether triathlon is really for you or if you should do something different instead. And that difference might come down completely to race selection rather than anything related to your actual fitness or preparation. So it's important really to consider that the goal here with your first race is not to pick the biggest or most prestigious race. It's just to pick a race that fits where you are right now, and not where you want to be eventually, even if you have some big goals down the line. Because this way we're focusing on maximizing your chance of longevity in the sport and actually being able to achieve those big goals that you may have later on. But that being said, if you, even with the best of intentions, pick a race that you think is going to be great, you think it ticks all the boxes, but it ends up, in hindsight, not being the best first experience, don't stress about it. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Plenty of athletes have had similar experiences in their first race, but turned it around and they have gone on to complete countless triathlons, even though they might not have had the best start to their triathlon journey. So this is not to make you stress out about this decision, but if you can make a good decision and it turns out good in practice as well, then that's a good way to start your triathlon journey. So let's start with the most important variable of selecting your first race, and that is the race distance. So if you listen to episode 1, I covered the common triathlon distances there. And the two shorter ones, which are my recommended ones for beginners, are super sprint distance and sprint distance. So a super sprint is around a 300 meter long swim, a 5 to 8 kilometer long bike, and a 1.5 to 2 kilometer run. So that is 330 yards, 3 to 5 miles, and 0.9 to 1.2 miles of swim bike run in imperial units. And this will take most athletes well under an hour, or just under an hour if you're on the slower end, but still under an hour for sure. A sprint distance, on the other hand, is a 750-meter swim, a 20-kilometer bike, and a 5-kilometer run, or 820 yards, 12 miles, and 3 miles, and this will take most athletes 1 to 2 hours. So these races are ideal for beginners, and my strong recommendation for your first race for several reasons. Number one is that they're short enough that you can prepare in just a few weeks. I recommend 6 to 8 weeks. And this is even if your current fitness level is low. The training commitment within this preparation period is also very manageable. You don't need to do any long days of training. You can basically do short and manageable training days during a pretty short period of time, and that sets you up well to complete these distances. Reason number two is that these distances are more forgiving of mistakes and also outside or external factors. For example, if you mess up your pacing or you forget to hydrate or fuel, those mistakes won't ruin your race because the distances are short enough that you can push through. And the same thing if some external factor, for example, really hot temperatures come into play, then that also won't necessarily ruin your race as much as it could in a longer distance. Reason number three is that you will learn all the same skills and face all the same challenges as you would in longer races, but you will do it in a more compressed time frame. So you will need to manage your transitions, you'll need to pace yourself across three disciplines, and you'll have to deal with all of the unique demands of a multisport racing, but you'll be done in 1 to 2 hours instead of 4 to 17 hours. You can also probably do many more of these races, and this means that you'll actually learn more and have a quicker learning curve in triathlon than you would in longer races. Reason number four is that these races are less taxing on the body, and it is especially much easier to recover from them than from longer races. And reason number five is that these distances are often, if not always, logistically simpler. For example, you tend to have check-in of your bike and all your stuff at race morning instead of the night before the race, which you might have in longer distances. And often they're also more beginner-friendly overall. So, for example, these races are built more around beginners and there is a higher concentration of other beginner triathletes around you. There is, of course, the next step up after a sprint distance, which is the Olympic distance or standard distance triathlon, which is double the distance of the sprint distance. And if you already have a good base in one of the disciplines, maybe in running or even in two of the disciplines, then an Olympic distance could definitely be an option. And it's absolutely doable. But for most people, I do recommend starting with a sprint or a super sprint, and then you can very quickly graduate up to the Olympic distance once you've done your first sprint. Or I shouldn't even say graduate up, because it's not better, but once you've done your first sprint, it basically proves to it that sets the stepping stone for going on and doing an Olympic distance without too much additional training. Because as long as you've done the sprint distance and you manage it quite well, then basically just continuing with consistent training will set you up quite well to also do an Olympic distance race, because they are still within that same magnitude of challenge level, shall we say, whereas going for something like an Ironman is a completely different level of challenge entirely. And yeah, speaking of that, the longer distances, so the half distance and full distance triathlons, or the 71.3 and Ironman distances, while they can absolutely be done and completed as your first race, and many people have done that and continue to do so, for me, they are not ideal as first races for beginners, because they require much more training, much more preparation in terms of equipment, planning your nutrition, hydration, and other things that it just takes some experience to get used to and learn how to deal with. It is absolutely fine to have a 7.3 as a medium-term goal. It can definitely be done in year one of your triathlon journey for most beginners. But I still think that starting shorter in your first race makes sense to build confidence and competence and make sure that you really enjoy that first experience and not have to go too deep by picking a race that is super long and challenging. If you're already thinking about the performance aspect of triathlon, and you know that your long-term goal is you want to be doing Ironmans and 7.3s, then I still strongly believe that starting with the shorter distances and racing them more frequently will make you a better long-distance athlete when you eventually get there, rather than starting to grind out that long-distance training from very early on and miss out on all of that important racing and training experience from the shorter distances. While race distance is, for me, the most important variable of selecting your first race, there are several other ones that are also important. Number one of these is the swim type of your race or swim format. Open water swims can be intimidating, even for good swimmers sometimes, but even more so, of course, for beginner swimmers. So if you're not confident in your swimming yet, then consider a race with a pool swim. That could be an excellent choice as your first race because they are, of course, done in a very controlled environment. You're always close to getting out of the pool if you want to or if you need to. And these races are common in the early season or in local sprint events with a focus on beginner friendliness. If you do pick an open water race and you're not the most confident swimmer, then choose a race that has a calm lake swim or reservoir swims. Those are usually much better than racing in the sea or in the ocean for your first race. You could also consider something like a well-protected marina swim. Those could be quite useful. River swims can work, but if you're a beginner, this requires a bit more research because I would strongly recommend against an upriver swim. I've had athletes race in upriver conditions, and these are not beginner athletes, but experienced athletes, and they could barely make forward progress in some of those conditions. So that's not a good option, but if there is a downriver swim, then that can certainly be an option. The final point here with the swim format is to consider the water temperature, because a nice and warm swim is best for your first race. It's just the most comfortable. But especially if you don't own a wetsuit, then a swim that is warm enough that you can swim in just your swimsuit would be ideal. And smaller lakes or reservoir swims in summer races often work well here because, of course, the water can quite quickly heat up and get really nice and warm. So that's another consideration with the swim type. And the second variable here in this section is the course type in general. So thinking more about the bike and run. Firstly, whether the bike and run courses are hilly or flat or technical or straightforward in terms of being simple, easy. And I would generally recommend avoiding courses that have any kind of extreme elevation or extremely technical demands. So for example, some extremely challenging descents on the bike if you're not coming from a cycling background. Basically, because then you can just focus on completing the distance in your first race without any sort of extra challenges, because completing a distance in a completely new sport is more than enough of a challenge anyway. But that being said, there's no need to avoid a race just because it has some hills. So I'm recommending avoiding very challenging courses. So that doesn't mean that your first race has to have a pancake flat bike and run course. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. But yeah, just be aware of what level of how much elevation gain you can expect in your race. That's quite important to consider, and maybe to avoid some extremely technical descents and things like that. The second consideration here is whether the race has a single transition area or split transition areas. I talked about this in the previous episode, but split transition areas, basically where you have T1 and T2 in different locations, which happens in some point-to-point races, that adds complexity with logistics and transporting your gear. So single transition area races are for sure easier and what I would recommend for beginners for their first race. All right, then we have field size, organization, and atmosphere. And smaller races often feel more relaxed and welcoming. But on the other hand, if they're too small, they may lack the crowds and supporters that can contribute to a great race atmosphere out on the race course that makes the race feel like a big deal. And larger races may also sometimes have better organization, but this is not always the case, but that could be the case certainly because they have more resources. And they might also be better equipped in terms of things like aid stations, more race swag, etc. But on the other hand, they can feel more intense and intimidating. So there are pros and cons to each of them. As a very general rule of thumb, I think that races that are in the 200 to 800 participation range, 800 is already quite a big race, but it's not a massive race. But this range tends to be very suitable for beginners as they are big enough to have a good energy and generally good organization. But they're also not the massive mass participation events that are too big so as to become intimidating. That's where I would fall, maybe more on the lower side of that range, 200 to 400, 500. But I could see any beginner going up to 800 for sure. And these are not by any stretch black and white. Like you can go well below or well above and do just fine, of course. But if you want a rule of thumb, then that's where I would pinpoint a good sweet spot to be. A good way to figure out what kind of field size a race has is, of course, to look at the race results from the previous years. that will give you a good indication. And in terms of the organization and the general atmosphere of the race, you can read race reports that you can find online or in social media, and also ask locally, ask your local tri club, people that have done it, ask in social media groups or forums to get a sense of what the races were like. Also, in terms of race organization, other than what you hear and read from others, races that have been around for a long time, so for example, they've been going for at least 5 years, they have a very good chance, in my experience, of being well-organized events. Newer races can be just as organized, they can be even more organized, but it's a bit more of a roll of the dice than a very established race, so that's something to consider. And some events explicitly advertise themselves as beginner-friendly, so this can be a great thing to look for in terms of organization and race support specifically for beginners. The next variable here to consider is to race locally or do a destination race, basically a race that you travel to and you stay overnight someplace else. And as a beginner, I recommend staying local if possible, because then you'll have no flights or long travel days the days before. So basically, this means that you eliminate travel stress and the logistical complexity that comes with travel, especially traveling with a bike. Also, you get to sleep in your own bed the night before the race, which is just so much nicer, and it's just what you're used to. So you're probably going to be nervous anyway. So sleeping in your own bed is going to at least help you sleep slightly better than you might do in a hotel bed. And you also will be more familiar with the environment, possibly depending on how local the event is. So potentially, if it's local enough, you can pre-ride the bike course or practice in the swim venue before the race, which would definitely help with you feeling that you're in control of the race because you've already ridden and swam in those conditions. And finally, it keeps the costs down, which you don't necessarily know yet before having done a triathlon how committed you are to triathlon. I think it makes sense to not spend a fortune on a race, not just in terms of the entry fee, but the travel and so on, before you know how much you actually like it. So race locally, keep the costs down, and see if you like it and want to stay in the sport. This is not to say that you absolutely shouldn't do a destination race as your first race. Some people might not even have a race within driving distance, so it may be your only option to do a triathlon. But if you have the option, it is just easier to do a local race. It allows you to focus on the experience of the race itself rather than on becoming a logistics expert while also trying to deal with travel and race stress at the same time. The next variable here is timing and season of the race. So you want to think about when is the optimal time for your first race. So we've mentioned already water temperature as a factor in the swim type section. And especially if you don't have a wetsuit, this is something to consider, because if the water is cold enough to require a wetsuit, that's fine, but it does add equipment cost and another thing to figure out. So if you don't have a wetsuit, then consider the timing of the race where the water temperature will allow you to just swim without a wetsuit. Secondly, think about if extreme heat may be an issue, or even things like extremely bad weather, lots of rain. So extremes of any kind are not the most comfortable or nice first experiences of triathlon. This all very much depends on the climate where you live, of course, what time you can expect different types of weather, but that is something to consider. Then also think about how much time that you want to have available for training before the race and whether there are busy periods when you won't be able to train. So you obviously don't want those busy periods to coincide with the period that you should be training for the race. And as I mentioned before, I think 6 to 8 weeks is a good period of time to get ready for a sprint distance race. Don't pick a race in 2 weeks, for example, if you haven't started training yet. And I also think that you don't need to, if it's the middle of winter now and there are where you are when you're listening to this and there are no races until 6 months, you can register for a race 6 months out. That's fine. But if you're listening to this when I release this episode at the end of June or early July, you don't need to wait 6 months to do a race. If there is a race 2 months from now, let's say late August or early September, because you might lose motivation along the way. So strike while the iron is hot and pick a race that is not too far out if you can. So 6 to 8 weeks, as I said, is enough time to prepare, but not so much that it feels like a distant fantasy, basically. So there's nothing wrong, of course, with having a race that is further out. And even if you want to feel more even more confident in your training, then for sure, training for 3 months before the race is absolutely fine. And if you start from a very low fitness level, it can absolutely be beneficial. You can gain more fitness in 3 months than you can in 2. But I think almost anybody can get ready for a sprint distance race in 8 weeks. So that is just for you to have and keep in mind as a rule of thumb for the timing of the race. And the final variable that I want to cover here is cost of the race. We touched on it already a little bit. Race entry fees can vary a lot. Of course, between different distances, the longer distances are more expensive, naturally, because they have bigger road closures, longer road closures, perhaps more expensive insurance, I don't know. But there are lots of factors that go into it. Race entry fees also vary a lot between countries. And as we have a global audience here, I won't even go into numbers of typical race entry fees because there is no such thing. It varies so much between countries and distances. But a couple of notes on cost that I would make here for you to consider when you sign up for your first one is, firstly, as I said, you don't have to spend a fortune on your first race. I don't think you should. I think you can keep it quite cheap. Secondly, factor in the costs of travel and accommodation if needed, if you are traveling for your race, and also the equipment that you need to get that you might not have yet. So for example, if you're comparing a race where you would have to buy or rent a wetsuit versus one where you don't need that, consider that as the overall cost package and not just the race entry fee. Also, a lot of races have tiered prices, so the earlier you sign up, the better. This is can be great when you have a long-term plan in place, but don't let it prevent you from signing up if you're already close in time to an event that is exciting to you. The advantage of signing up late is that you're much more likely to follow through on this and commit to the race and actually do the race when you're 2 months out rather than when you're 8 months out. So it's not the end of the world to pay a bit extra for that benefit, I don't think. Shorter races are cheaper, as I mentioned, so consider that as another reason to consider the shorter races as a great starting point. And finally, cost is not always correlated with the quality of the race. If two seemingly similar races have very different entry fees, you shouldn't just assume that the more expensive one is automatically better. As per a previous point, read race reports and reviews, ask on social media groups or community forums, ask in your local tri club to hear what the real-world experience of others have been like, the experiences have been like, because the more expensive race might be spending all of the extra revenue on marketing instead of making the race a better quality race. So you can't tell from cost alone. It's not to say that the cheaper races are better either, for sure not. But yeah, it's not a good indicator of quality necessarily. So really asking others or reading race reports even from people you don't know, that's a good way to figure out if a race is good quality. But basically, don't end up choosing the more expensive race because you think that that race is going to be higher quality if cost is the only reason that you think is going to be a higher quality race. Now, let's discuss how to find a good first race. Basically, what I mean here is where do you actually find the races? The first good source of finding races is your National Triathlon Federation's race calendar. Most federations have a full list of sanctioned events on their website where you can search by different filters, things like distance, location, and date. And in the show notes and the episode description here, I have linked to the USA Triathlon and British Triathlon race calendars or race pages. And because these are the countries where most of our listeners are from, but you can most likely find a list of events on your own federation's website that are produced directly by the federation and also sanctioned by the federation. This will depend on your country, of course, but in many countries you will be able to do that, and that is a great source. The second option you have is to look in online directories. There are countless of these, and one that I linked to, simply because it's global, so it can be useful for anybody listening, is ahotu.com. I don't know how that website is pronounced, but you can find the link in the episode description. So that's a good directory, but there are countless others. If you just search triathlons in your country, so triathlons in Sweden, triathlons in Germany, triathlons in Canada, you'll find a number of them that you can check. And this will allow you to get a good view of all of the different races that are out there. Unfortunately, I don't think there is a single race directory that has all the races. And you will learn this. This is where, again, the race community, which is my tip number 3 or resource number 3, is your local triathlon clubs, your training groups, your local shops. So for example, bike shops or specialty running stores. These are the kinds of communities where you can often find information about races locally and nationally. And the people here can give you the insider scoop on which races are well organized and beginner friendly. So really, it makes sense to befriend some people in these communities or just get involved in these communities somehow. And similarly, the online communities, so Facebook groups, WhatsApp groups, perhaps platforms like Reddit might have groups like this. They are great resources, and you can get a lot of help by asking there about recommendations for races in your area. And when you have your list of interesting races that you've gotten from your community, from your national federation website, from online directories, and you start browsing on the specific race websites to find out more, keep in mind that while it's absolutely not a perfect correlation, an organized and informative website is often a good sign that the race itself might be organized. Now, it definitely doesn't have to be a super modern website from an expensive web designer, because frankly, most races can't afford that, because you're not getting a lot of money like in the bottom line from organizing races at the end of the day. So it's not about the design, but I would look for clear and detailed race information that includes time schedules, course maps, elevation profiles, information about aid stations, and maybe something like an athlete guide with further information for athletes and prospective athletes. Although sometimes the athlete guide is just shared to athletes who actually register, so it might not be available on the website. But these are just things that I think shows that the race is, and the race organizer is actually very organized. So that can be a good sign. I've done great races that didn't even have a website. So I'm not saying that a race website has to tick all of these boxes, but it certainly is helpful if it does. And it can be a sign of good general organization of the race and the whole race experience. So I think take your time when you're looking at races to find a race that seems like the right one for you. But also, you don't have to overthink it. If you have several good options, you can't know for sure which is the best one. But as long as they all seem like good options, you can't really go much wrong with any one of them. So just pick one and sign up. And yeah, then don't overthink it any more than that. And then see how it goes on race day. Now let's have a couple of listener stories to get some real world experience that you can benefit from, hopefully. The first one is from Christy, who writes, "Hi, Michael. I was excited and nostalgic to hear your Beginner Series Episode 1 on Monday. Your podcast, Your First Beginner Series, was the first I found back in 2020 when I started considering triathlon. I've now done 9 triathlons and totally love the sport. I would be happy to share my beginner story. Firstly, your podcast was the soundtrack to my COVID years, and it remains my favorite triathlon podcast. Secondly, I'm just your average person with no sporting background, but decided to give it a go, and I totally enjoyed what I've done and learned along the way. I'm a 43-year-old mom of 2 from Melbourne, Australia, who works part-time and does volunteer work 2 days per week. I've now done 5 sprint races, 2 Olympics, and 1 7-on-3, and at present I'm training for a marathon just to tick it off, but then I plan to go back and stay with triathlon. Here's an overview of my journey. My first sprint try ended up being a run-bike-run due to poor water quality. I spent so much time trying to figure out what to put in my water bottle, and in the end, I got it out for a sip during the first part of the bike leg, and hadn't practiced putting it back, so it dropped on the floor and I had no drink. I later learned that it didn't really matter about hydration for that distance, but I hope it didn't get in the way of anyone else. So to be clear for listeners, Christy here hadn't practiced putting the bottle back in the bottle cage on the bike, and then she dropped the bottle on the ground. That's what happened. I am going to cut a few of the next race experience here and jump to next was Noosa, where my triathlon dream began, and it was unreal. The vibe, the beauty, the people in their front yards with hoses who cooled us down if we gave the okay, and the peaceful Garmin hill that I conquered, but was nervous about going down on the way back. And on it goes, including the amazing Melbourne 7-on-3, which I absolutely loved. And here's a quick summary of what I love about triathlon. I spend more time out in nature. I've discovered bay swimming, which feels like a whole other world. I regularly listen to podcasts about so many interesting topics, triathlon, neuroscience and health, etc. It encourages me to eat better food, focus on good quality sleep, drink less alcohol socially, and I love tuning into my body and listening to what it's telling me. and I've never had a coach, and most of what I know is from your podcast series. So that's Christy's first triathlon story, and I think that's a great point about the water bottle. First of all, in a sprint or super sprint, yeah, it's not the end of the world if you don't really drink, but it can be helpful to drink, especially in really warm weather. So practice putting the bottle into the bottle cage is a good learning there. And I think starting with a sprint try, it turned out to be a great solution here for Christy. So and gradually building up Olympic distances and then eventually a 7.3, that's for me a perfect pathway. I'm going to read one more story, and this is from Sindre, who writes, "My first triathlon race was back in 2002. I had been introduced to endurance sports the year before when I attended an MTB marathon with a group from work. I was a heavy smoker at the time, and my lifestyle was unhealthy. I only trained a handful of times for that first MTB race, and I had no clue what I was getting into. About halfway in, I bonked big time and could hardly turn my legs. That was when I was introduced to my friend Grit. Grit is that toughness to take on adversity, dig deep, and just get the job done. The elated feeling of relief and accomplishment after finishing the MTB race got me hooked on endurance racing. Only a few months later, I was on a weekend trip to another city where I happened to watch the 2001 National Triathlon Championship live. That was so exciting and inspiring to watch that I decided there and then to come back and do that same Olympic distance race the year after. In 2002, that is where my triathlon journey started. Since then, my friend Grit and I meet up at least a couple of times a year to test our resolve in various types of endurance racing. This year, 23 years after my first Olympic distance race, I'm doing my fifth age group Ironman brand world championship, this time in the 70.3 distance. I'm racing in the M50 age group now, and I have no plans of stopping." So that's another great story from Sindre. Sindre, who many of you might know from our Mallorca training camps, of course. Great friend of the podcast and of Scientific Triathlon in general. And one thing that I want to highlight there is that triathlon can be for anybody. So Sindre mentions he started as a heavy smoker with an unhealthy lifestyle, and he got into mountain biking first, or doing one mountain biking event, and then into triathlon. And now anybody who has trained with Sindre know that he's a very fit M50 age grouper. And very strong. So that's a great inspirational story, I think. And great story to include here. And I'll keep it at these two. I got quite a few more. I won't read them because of keeping the episode fairly short. But I want to highlight a couple of short things from a couple of stories that I received, if not read the whole story. So one was from Sabina, who did a local 70.3 as her first race. And she got through it and got hooked on triathlon. She does say that with the benefit of hindsight, she recommends starting with shorter distances because the long distance was brutal, especially in 35 degrees Celsius as your first race or her first race. And the second one that I wanted to mention is Douglas had a story about travel and logistical challenges with his bike not arriving due to transportation strikes. And this highlighted the benefit of racing locally to eliminate the risks of these kinds of things happening for your first race. Douglas managed to solve it eventually, actually. So that's a really good example of resourcefulness. But if you can avoid it, you want to mitigate these sorts of risks. So that, I think, is the benefit of racing locally. And if you missed episode number one, in it, I shared my own first triathlon story. So if you're curious about that, you can go back and listen to episode number one of this series. Now, let's wrap the episode up with a few key takeaways. First, your first race should build confidence and momentum and be a gateway into triathlon. So look for something manageable. It doesn't have to be an epic challenge. Second, start with a sprint or a super sprint. They're accessible, affordable, and fun. And you can do a lot of them, and you can accelerate your learning curve by doing more races. Third, look for a swim suitable for your swimming level and for whether you own a wetsuit or not. So pool swims or con swims like lake and reservoirs are good venues for your first race. And be sure to research the water temperature, especially if you're going to be racing without a wetsuit. Fourth, choose a local race so you can sleep in your own bed and avoid travel and logistical challenges. Five, 6 to 8 weeks of training is enough to get you ready for your first sprint distance race, so you don't need to sign up for a race 6 months from now if you have races closer in time than that available. 6. Your National Triathlon Federation is a great resource to find races, as are local clubs, community forums, and local shops like bike shops and similar specialty stores. 7. Don't overthink it. Pick something that feels manageable but exciting. And 8. While selecting your first race warrants some thought, and it warrants an episode in this beginner series, if you pick wrong, in air quotes, it isn't the end of the world. You can absolutely still stay motivated to be in the sport and find a better race experience for the next time. So don't put too much pressure on that first race experience having to be perfect. So here's a bit of homework or a call to action after listening to this episode. Go and browse some race calendars and see if you can find a local tri club or a community group and forum. See if you can then get a list of some races in your area in the next few months, put it in a spreadsheet, and start to look at the race websites and get a sense of what's out there. And if there are some races that catch your eye, then bookmark them. And if you're motivated enough, by all means, go ahead and sign up. Having a race on the calendar is one of the best motivators that you can have for consistent training, if not the best motivator. And as always, I want to hear from you. If you have questions about this, about race selection, or if you've found a race and want to run it by someone, send me an email. You can reach me at michael@scientifictriathlon.com. That's Michael with a K. Or you can DM me on Instagram @scientifictriathlonhq, although I do prefer email, to be honest. So if you don't mind, then that's a better way to reach me, but I'll definitely answer Instagrams as well. We have one or two regular interview-based episodes coming up between now and the next episode of the Beginner Series. But in the next Beginner Series episode, we'll talk about gear and equipment, so things like what you really need to get started and what you can skip and so on. And if you are no longer a complete beginner, or even if you are a very experienced triathlete, or you have just kind of moved past that complete beginner status, if you have a personal story about gear and equipment that would be useful for the listener story segment of that episode, then please send it to me on email or Instagram. I really love all of the feedback that I received for this series so far and the listener stories. So thank you to everybody who sent them in. Please keep it coming. I think it's invaluable for complete beginners to be able to hear these real world examples of people that at some point were in the exact same position where they are. It's for learning, it's for getting inspired, and maybe to helping avoid a mistake or two. So there are so many benefits of others hearing it. So yeah, I'm thankful for all of you, for the listener community, for sharing and helping the new generation of triathletes, whether they are new generation, whatever the age is, but the new generation as in people that are just coming into the sport. If you are a beginner and you have questions ahead of time for that episode on gear and equipment, then please send in your questions and I'll answer them on the episode, of course. You can find the detailed show notes for this episode on scientifictriathlon.com/beginner2. That's the number 2. And in the show notes and in the episode description in your podcast app, you can find the links and resources I mentioned before. To learn more about what we do at Scientific Triathlon, visit scientifictriathlon.com. And don't forget to subscribe to That Triathlon Show and to follow us on Instagram @scientifictriathlonhq. If you like the podcast, I would really appreciate a 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts or in Spotify. It really helps other people find the show, the platforms, put it in front of more people. And this helps me dedicate more time to keep going with the podcast and this series. So that really helps massively. If you can also write something, then that's even better. But even just a 5-star rating is amazing if you can do that. So thank you so much if you take the time to do that. Big thanks finally to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelandhydration.com. If you're looking for high quality, practical and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel and Hydration. And don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS25. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.